Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Teich. Last month, our astronomy chat focused on the 13 moons of Neptune, the planet furthest from our sun. This month, we travel to the very edges of our solar system to Pluto. Even though it is no longer considered a planet by many, Pluto still has moons. Astronomy contributor Gene Creighton tells Bonnie North the first one was discovered in 1978.
Charon was considered strange because Pluto is not that much bigger than this moon Charon, so that was a bit of a question mark. In fact, for most systems, the planet is so much bigger than the moon that the what we call the center of mass, where most of the mass lies, so which is the point that on either side you have 50-50% of the mass, is in the planet. That's the usual, but not in the case of Pluto and Charon, which of course was one of the many things that was strange about Pluto all along and one of the reasons why we realized that Pluto really should never have been a planet in the first place. But that doesn't mean we can't enjoy its lovely moons. And by the way, about Pluto itself, it was named by Venetia Burney, who was 11, this is in 1930, and she was from Oxford, England.
And Pluto was...
was the name that stuck. There were other names that were considered. I guess Minerva was a favorite, and Vulcan was another favorite, but it was considered that Pluto was the correct name, especially since PL were the initials of the person who discovered Pluto. So, setting that aside... subsequently, there have been two more moons called Nix and Hydra, and they were discovered fairly early on when the Hubble Space Telescope went up. Nix is from Nichta, which means night, and Hydra, of course, is the terrible monster that had the multiple heads. If you chopped one off, you got two for one. And Hydra, of course, was taken down by no other than Hercules. And that was the only labor that Hercules did for which he needed some help. He needed his nephew to assist him. Okay, so the other two, the recent, more recent ones that were discovered in 2011 and 2012 have been fondly referred to as P4 and P5 for some time. The discoverer of these moons proposed a different scheme for naming them. Usually, and I'll read this because the name is so awkward, the committee that names astronomical objects is set from the International Astronomical Union is called Working Groups for Planetary System Nomenclature and Small Body Nomenclature.
Yeah, a very fancy way of saying the committee that names things.
That's right, the naming committee, yes. But anyway, I understand that's the name they use. So they ultimately have the final word. But the author thought it would be fun to see, choose 21 candidates. All the names that they put forward were connected to Greek myths and the underworld. And I'll tell you a story in just a second. But I just wanted to say that the list they chose, I fully support. I thought, oh, these are excellent names. Lethe, for example, is one of the rivers of the underworld, and it means oblivion. Lethe means oblivion in Greek. Acheronas was another one of the rivers. And some of you may know the names of Orpheus or Orpheus and Evridiki.
That one I don't know.
You probably don't recognize it the way I say it. I confess I frankly don't remember how it's
Eurydice?
Yes. In Greek, Evridiki. The other name that was included, which I thought was a bit of a stretch, was Vulcan, the god of metalworking, really. He was very crafty, and I mean that in a good sense. He was very good with his hands. That was the one, about 18,000 people put in votes. That was the one that came first. And although I think the discoverer wanted to make a case that Vulcan somehow is connected to Pluto, I believe most people chose Vulcan because Spock.
Of Star Trek.
I was going to say, yes.
It has to be a Star Trek thing.
Yeah. But the committee saw through that and and I think correctly chose the two names that it did. Styx is the famous river that the gods swore by. And Kerberos, the three-headed dog that always protected the gates.
I was going to say guarded. Yeah, there
yes.
was a guarding.
Yes,
yep.
he mm-hmm. was a guarding dog. And it allowed you to go in, but of course it didn't allow you to escape. or to leave. There are very few people who got to leave the underworld. Hercules is one, but of course the other one is Orpheus. And the story there, can I tell you a story?
Yes, yes, it's a great story too.
Okay, so here's the story. Orpheus and Eurydice were very, very much in love, and they were planning to get married and have children and live the good life. But sadly, they were by the river, and a snake bit Eurydice, and she died. He was absolutely heartbroken, Orpheus was, and he wanted so badly to join her that he was considering his options. Maybe he should go to the underworld and just be with her, or maybe he could cut a deal. He was a famous musician, and he thought that maybe if he brought his lyre with him, his harp, that he would be able to bring her back and try and convince Pluto, the god of the underworld, that
she belonged with
she
him.
Belongs, she yeah. really belongs with him. So he took his lyre and he sang down, went down to the underworld and managed to convince and sweet talk the ferryman to cross the river Styx that, yes, I can do that. It was Charon, by the way, to go and speak to Pluto himself. So he brought his lovely lyre and started singing songs of love. And Pluto, of course, had to have a very hard heart, because if he let every single person who had a loved one to leave, then he would be out of business pretty soon. So he wasn't going to yield. But his wife, Persephone, who was stuck living in the underworld pretty much against her will, she was touched by this story and said, surely we can leave one go. And sneaky Pluto said, I think we can, but there's one caveat. You will go first. She will follow you. You may not look back. You can only look back when you're out of my domain. If you look to make sure, if you have any doubt and you look back to see her, she will never be able to leave again. That's it. That's your one chance. So Orpheus thought, well, I can do that. And he was so pleased that he hears his chance. He's actually going to do what really can't be done normally. And Eurydice was thrilled that, of course, she would be reunited with her loved one, even though she was torn by doubt that how could this be? This might be a vision. This could be a cruel trick. So she started following Orpheus, and she needed some reassurances that this isn't a vision. And he would say, yes, just keep going. We're almost there. We're almost at outside of this domain, and I'll be able to see you forevermore. But as you can imagine, of course, she was so upset. She was so worried that this is just a trick that she did convince him to look. And that was the last time he saw her. So that might be the sad end of that story. And those names in the end didn't make the grade, as it were. But we do have great news, and that is that New Horizons, a spacecraft, is going toward Pluto, and we're hoping to see much more detail for all these objects around Pluto. So it is supposed to get there by July 14th, 2015. It is a great distance away from us, so it's more than halfway there. It left in 2006. It's going to travel within 8,000 miles of Pluto.
That's very close.
That's very close. Now, what's interesting to me is that four of these objects weren't discovered before New Horizons' path was designed. So the principal investigators, I'm sure, had sleepless night thinking, oh my God, what if our path hits one of these objects? That would be terrible. It turns out that it's not a concern. Charon is big enough that if there are small like debris that happens because of these small moons hitting other small objects, that debris is probably going to be absorbed by Charon's gravitational field. So we're not too worried that there's going to be things that are moving too fast that might hit and destroy the spacecraft. There could be, but we're thinking that Charon has covered our back, thankfully. So we're going to stick with the original flight orbit. However, we're hoping that we can make some small adjustments, perhaps after we've gotten close to Pluto, to see other objects, either moons of Pluto or other Kuiper Belt objects, to understand more about those icy worlds that in some cases, bring us comets.
Oh, and we like comets.
We do. Remember? Cool, beautiful, crisp objects. Of which we're going to see one, a fairly bright one, in November this year.
And which one is that?
It's called Pan-STAR, and it should be visible to us. Its best approach is going to be on Thanksgiving.
How perfect.
Fortuitous.
Yes.
So hopefully the weather will be good for us, so we will enjoy it again. And that's another little connection to Pluto.
Well, Jean, as always, I always learn so much when we sit and chat. Have a great rest of the summer, and we'll catch up with you in the fall.
Thank you.
Jean Creighton is the director of UW-Milwaukee's Manfred Olson Planetarium and is our regular astronomy contributor. She spoke with Bonnie North about the moons of Pluto. Tomorrow on the show, the debate continues over a proposed iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. We'll hear from a leading opponent, plus some backers of the mine who spoke at a recent hearing. Plus, as filming wraps on an independent drama being shot in Milwaukee, we'll go to the set and chat with lead actor Sean Astin. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.